Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
My goodness, what a glorious occasion we have today. This is truly tremendous. Today we are joined by James Leary, and I personally could not be happier. What a time to be alive.
Truly. We've waited for this moment. James. Also, do you go by James? I feel like folks have referred to you in many different ways.
So, yes, I do. I grew up a Jimmy. Because I'm from the East Coast. Mm-hmm. So I grew up a Jimmy, but when I got into SAG, there was already a Jimmy Leary. So then I became James. So I know, like, the way I judge is that people who call me Jimmy and it doesn't sound weird are people who I knew pre-1996.
Aha, yes.
And there are a few select people who I've met afterwards who can call me Jimmy and it doesn't sound weird.
They have ascended.
And you both are free to call me Jimmy.
Wow.
I don't know.
You're welcome.
Yeah. We are both from the East Coast too, so it does come naturally.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, as Jenny was saying, we are so happy to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah.
We probably could do a six-part interview with you, but we're going to try to keep it to
just
our
you
most
wait
pressing questions. Yeah. But I suppose since we are inside of Slayers right now, perhaps the place to start, though I'm certain we will wind up all over in your journey with Buffy, is how you found out about this project, Slayers. You know, was it already being written? Was it like, did they say, are you going to come on board and then write Clem in? What was the vibe?
So I'm assuming you mean Slayers, a Buffyverse story, available on Audible.
Correct.
Exclusively.
That's the very one.
On Audible. I'm assuming you mean that one. Yeah.
That's the one, yes.
Contract obligation checked. No, so I have been good friends with Christopher Golden and Amber Benson for a very, very long time. Obviously, I met Amber on the set, and she was always such a delightful, delightful person. And I ended up working with her and for her. She cast me in a movie she did called Lovers, Liars, and Lunatics way back in, like, say 2005, 2006, somewhere around there. So, and then of course, you know, we've kept in touch over conventions over the years, and she's just always been one of my most favorite people on the planet. And Chris, I met doing a convention in the Catskills at the Friar Tuck Inn.
Wow. I am sitting in the Catskills right now.
Right now?
Right now.
Where's Baby? Is she in a corner?
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Never.
And let me tell you, this place was probably popular in about 1956. So it was a crazy convention. And Chris and I got to be good friends during that. We did a charity auction together. And so we've just, we've run into each other over the years and kept in touch. And I think it was Chris who emailed me one day and said, hey, we've got this thing coming up. Would you be willing to, you know, maybe reprise Clem for an audio thing? And I was like, sure. Of course I would. Absolutely. And he was like, yeah, Amber and I are writing. And I was like, yes. And I was very much expecting just to be in, you know, just a little bit. And then some time went by and some more time went by and it got closer and closer. And then he sent me the scripts. And I was already on board. I would do anything. I would do one line for them. I would stand in the background and just breathe heavy if they wanted me to. So when I got the scripts, I started reading them and I was like, wait a second. And yeah, they made me like a main character. So I was all on board, and it was such a joy to read, and I'm so thankful to both of them, and of course to Audible, and all the amazing people over there. But yeah, they really just threw me a bone, and I think it's 'cause they believed in me, I think, more than I believed in myself, and they knew that Clem could be part of the Scoobies, so thankful.
It's really exciting to get to experience, as you know, longtime fans of the universe. Clem is like a fan favorite with, you know, relatively, if you look at, you know, the cast across the entire television series, Clem is relatively, you know,
8 episodes.
Is it eight?
that's, I would have guessed higher because he takes up so much room in my heart.
Same,
You
same.
know? But
Well.
it's just like one of, there are so many magical things about this series, and one of them to me really is just getting to experience so much more of Clem. Getting ready to talk to you, I was just thinking about like how cool it is that Clem really brings the warmth, you know, to this series more than like plenty of levity and welcome. But I feel like you really got to like stretch your performance legs in terms of like the like warm fuzzies. Like it's so awesome and just like such an enchanting expansion of the character. This is not a question, it's just a compliment.
Oh, thank you so much. I agree with you 100%, and you know, it's not, they wrote such amazing stuff, and I think because I've known them for so long and we have all been on stages together and they have seen me do a million different things, I think they understood that, you know, Clem is kind of he's definitely a part of me. And they just ran with it, and I loved being sort of that heart of the show, yeah, it's a show. I'll call it a show. But it was so great, and I was so thankful to them that they trusted me with that they trusted, you know, because I kind of retired from acting a while ago, and they trusted that I could still bring it, and I was so happy for that, and it was just so much fun. Like it was just such a treat. That entire week was, I came home and I was like almost depressed. I was like, oh, why can't I do that every day? Because it was just so much fun, and we had such a great time. And I can't speak highly enough. And Casey Weiland, who was the co-director and producer, and again, all the Audible people, especially the Audible UK people who were there, everyone was just so supportive, and I just felt really supported, so that whatever work was being done, I was really confident with. So, and th thank you for that. I love the character. And yeah, I did 6 episodes in season 6 and 2 in season 7, and I can't believe that 20, God, 22 years later, I'm still here. You know, never in my wildest dreams would I have ever have imagined.
There's something about, because I was thinking the same thing, Jenny, that you gave voice to just then, is like Clem is such a massive James, I think you saw recently we posted about our next Buffy prom, and we've done this Buffy prom for a handful of years, and people cosplay all over the place, and they do, you know, Cordelia and the homecoming dress, and on and on. And I am, as soon as we wrap this interview, I am going to send to you my favorite cosplay of all, which was someone who came as Clem. And they
Oh my
spent
gosh.
hours dr like f sewing the folds in their like hoodie. There were kittens and cards. It was
No way.
like epic, epic, epic. And Clem is it's just, he's such a massive part of our hearts in the show. And one of the questions that I didn't get to ask you when we were together at Comic-Con that I so desperately wanted to was
Well,
about, yeah,
it
I
was
mean,
tricky. It was so tricky. It was like a minefield.
there was a lot happening that day.
Yeah.
But Clem always had a depth. There was a depth there, but this series investigates it for the first time, and I think we would all love to hear what that was like for you approaching the character with these new facets, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. The original character, I think, had a lot of heart built into it. You know, he was only supposed to be a five-line character in one episode, and for whatever reason, the fans really responded to it, and they just kept bringing me back. And season six, as we all know, is a dark season. And I kind of lucked out in that, you know, the timing was right, and my particular sensibilities, being primarily a comedian and knowing the show, it's one of my favorite TV shows of all time. You know, I've said this before. When I moved to Los Angeles, it was one of the top five shows I wanted to work on. Probably in the top two. I loved Buffy. I mean, I was a fan from, I think I started watching halfway through season one, and I was kind of like, okay. And then season two hit, and I was like, I am hooked. From season two forward, I was in. So I knew the show, and I knew that a lot of times the demons were more human than the humans. And that's what I tried to play, and luckily it worked out. So I think there was that heart built in by people like Jane Espenson and Stephen DeKnight and Drew Goddard, Drew Greenberg, a lot of the writers who kept bringing the character back to just bring a little levity and a little heart. And then Chris and Amber just ran with it. And so every time I got to read a page that was something new, especially doing some of the more emotional stuff for Clem, you know, was really kind of impactful for me. You know, the kitten stuff has always been funny, but also strikes true to my heart because, you know, I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic. And, you know, I don't intend to bring that to a role, but I don't know that I can necessarily help it. So I'm rambling. I don't know if that answered your question at all.
No, it did. I mean, especially like because I think that the depth of it is not only in the sort of reveal that Clem has this like sadness inside of him. But also I took special note of how the kitten conversation was had in this specifically, especially with Giles. There's like a moment where Giles really like lifts you up after the lion. That felt incredibly intentional and very specific.
Yeah, definitely. And also just to be able to do a scene with the incomparable Anthony Stewart Head, you know, I knew him on set. I've known him from conventions, but I never got a chance to work with him. And that was, you know, I'd never worked with Charisma. I'd never worked with Juliet. I briefly worked with Emma, like very small. So to get to work with them, because as you know, we did it as if it was a staged reading. So we were all in the same room. Tony was piped in from England. So we got to really, you know, he was on video. So we got to see each other's reactions and stuff. So that was really awesome. It was such a privilege. It was really great.
It's so interesting as two people who have watched this television, like the television series a ton, we have had to kind of like very carefully thread out, oh, like, wait, who knows each other? Because in our minds, it's like, this is an ensemble cast and they all know each other.
And you're all my best friends.
Naturally.
Or second best friend. Who's counting?
maybe third.
Of this cast, who had you worked with the most? James Marsters?
Yeah, definitely James. And then second would be Michelle Trachtenberg. Those were the two I worked with the most.
A pair. We loved Dawn and Clem, you know, getting
so
all
much
those
fun.
Bowls of
so
chips.
Much fun.
Just the best.
So much fun.
Did you make friendships like on the set? I mean, we've heard about Amber and Chris, obviously, but Jenny has actually crafted this question and I've ripped off her joke just a moment ago. but she said, did you make any lasting friendships on the set of Buffy or the set of Slayers? Parenthetically, best friends, second best friends. So I already blew the joke.
You know,
I'm
any tier.
So sorry.
Sure. You know, the set, you know, film sets are, especially TV sets, are very strange, especially if you're not, you know, in the show cast. You're kind of showing up as a journeyman actor, actress. And your job is to come in and do your job and be professional and then leave. And if you get to keep coming back, that's awesome. And yeah, you can build, you know, work friendships, but I'm not calling Sarah Michelle up going, hey, you want to go have coffee? But where it really started to, friendships really did form, was in the convention circuit. And, you know, back, I hate to say back, because 1996 was yesterday, right?
Well, it was totally. It was actually 4 years ago, yeah, which is
exactly,
incredible
right.
to me. But,
so
yeah.
In 2000, I think my first convention was, it was after my first season. So I often say it's like losing your virginity to a porn star. My first convention ever was San Diego Comic-Con in 2002.
Oh, my God.
And wow. It was bananas. But for the next like 5 to 6 years was sort of the height and heyday of Buffy conventions. Mm-hmm. The show had just gone off the air in 2003, and then it just exploded. One year I did, I think, 14 cons. Yeah, it was nuts. And in doing that, that's where those friendships started to form. You know, I was at cons with James and Andy Hallett and Mark Lutz and Amber and Emma Caulfield and just RIP Camden Toy and all, you just, this, we became this weird traveling circus. Claire Kramer, Jonathan Woodward, you know, all the Whedonverse people.
Yeah.
We were all just thrown into these crazy circumstances. Jay August, so many more people I can't even, you know, pretty much everyone you could think of. Yeah. Except for the, you know, top folks. Mm-hmm. And that's where the friendships really started to form, because we were oftentimes in cities we didn't know and for 3 to 4 days at a time. And yeah, we've had some great times. I once had to sneak out of a Paris hotel with Danny Strong and get on a subway before the hotel people realized that the con promoters had not paid our bill. And we didn't want to get stuck with the bill because it was on the Champs-Élysées and it was expensive. So we all snuck out, and I'll never forget, we're walking down so it was Rabia Lamort, Jenny Callender, Tom Link, Danny Strong, Bailey Chase, myself, all our respective partners. And we had gotten a phone call in the middle of the night that said, the promoter didn't pay the bill, you have to get out, or else they're going to stick you for the bill. And we were like, whoa, none of us are paying this bill. So we all packed our stuff, and I don't know if you've ever been to Europe. Maybe not. Most of the hotels there have teeny tiny elevators, for two people, and they're very, very slow. And there were like eight of us with all our luggage in a 4-story hotel. So none of us could fit in the elevator. So what we did at like 6 a.m., 7 a.m., we all packed up our crap real super fast, and we got down to like the first floor landing. So it was a one flight of stairs into the lobby, out the door.
Yep.
We're all there with all our bags. We're like, all right, we're waiting for a phone call because one of our managers had gotten a person who lived in Paris to come up with a car that we could all throw our baggage into, but that would fill the car. Then we had to hoof it to the underground station.
Oh my gosh.
So we finally get the call, and we're like, all right, 1, 2, 3, go. And we all just pick up our bags and haul ass through the lobby. And everyone, we're like, straight ahead, don't talk to anybody, don't listen to anyone. If someone starts yelling at you, ignore them. We bolt out the front door, throw our bags in, she takes off, and we start walking down the street to get on the underground station.
Oh, incredible.
So yes, it's experiences like that that are just like the crazy times we had traveling the world that made us kind of this weird family.
Well, and like the con of it all, I mean, it's something that we have very little experience with. We've really, like, we've been to con-esque environments, except for one. And one was like real con, and it was in London. And it was the first time we met James Marsters and
Which
Mark
one?
Metcalf. It was the Vampire Ball in London.
Oh, so one of, was it Sean Harry's?
Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had no, James Marsters thought we were hysterical because we were like just green and exhausted by like halfway through day one. He's like, first con, eh?
Oh,
you know?
Boy. Well, especially the London, like Brits do it different than everyone else. Those cons are insane.
We had no idea what to expect, but you know, it also gave, I think, both Jenny and I a whole different kind of respect for what you all are doing. And obviously, like, it's incredible to interact with with people who love the work and everything, but it is also such incredibly hard work to be that present in that capacity. So I have to give.
For like 3 days straight. Right. With like, you know, a constant flow of individuals.
It's just really, it's really incredible. And it's a really wonderful thing that you all do to, you know, give so many of folks who love the show the chance to interact with you. But just saying, I see you.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I shall see. I have always loved cons. If you can't tell, I'm a natural extrovert. So I oftentimes gain energy from interactions like that. No, at the end, I'm exhausted. And it's hard work? Yes, it's hard. Is it roofing a house in Texas in August? No. But there is, you are giving a little bit of yourself to each and every person. I think at least if you're doing it right. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I've always approached it, haven't always acted like it, but I've approached it as a privilege that I get to do this because I'm a fan. I'm a fan of so many things. Like I have gotten to meet people doing cons, especially early on for show. Like I grew up watching, I'm old. I grew up watching Buck Rogers and Battlestar Galactica and A-Team and The Incredible Hulk and all these shows and movies that meant so much to me as a kid and a part of the reason why I became an actor. I got to meet all these people and hang out with them and listen to their stories. And so to me, that is what has been the most fun. And watching people like LeVar Burton or, you know, I always admired James Marsters for his ability to really connect with each and every fan. Even if he's only got 10 or 15 seconds, he manages to connect with everybody. And I took that to heart in that, you know, this interaction means something and it also means something to me. But British conventions are a different beast. The first one I ever did, like I had done some American ones and they were cool. And the first British one I did, I came out on stage in front of like 2,500 people and it was like, I was Axl Rose. I was like, what? Hold on a second. And then it was, you know, three solid days of Guinness and fish and chips. And and I got home jet lagged, having to go to work at Buca di Beppo as a waiter. And I was like, hi, do you know yesterday people were screaming for me? No, I'll have your lemon chicken right up. Yep, no problem. Thank you.
Hey, Kristen.
Oh, hey, Jenny.
You know how we're always obtaining new lotions and creams for our faces?
You know, I really do. We talk about skincare more than anyone probably has a right to know.
It's true. If you, like us, are tired of cycling through ineffective skincare trends and overcomplicated routines, then let us tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
And here's the deal. The reason that OneSkin is very different from anything else is because they use a proprietary OS1 peptide. If there was time, I would play the medical doctor jingle for myself just for saying that. It's the first ingredient that is proven to actually switch off the aging cells that cause the lines and the wrinkles and the thinning skin. And they have a bunch of studies to back this up. We've both received their products and just started using them, and they are awesome. I also love the fact that they come with refillable inserts. So you sort of get your plastic container one time, and then if you like the product and you keep going, they just send you the little packet that goes inside. So if you want to learn more about them, you should check them out at oneskin.co. They are the world's first skin longevity company. They focus on cellular aspects of aging and keep your skin looking and acting healthier for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code BUFFERING at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code BUFFERING. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 visits. So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
While we're in Con Town, I believe that Christopher told us when we talked to him that your kids were at Comic-Con this year for the Slayers. Was this like the first time, because of you were telling us their ages, and it sounds like maybe they were not probably watching genre horror dramedies
when
Buffy was airing? Was this the first time they got to experience, you know, Buffy mania, Clamania?
Yes and no. So my eldest son, who is about to be 24, he was very, very young. But I took him to we took him to a lot of conventions when I was younger. He was younger. but he doesn't really remember a lot of them because he was like 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
And then he'd been to a few. My youngest, Owen, had never really been, he'd been to 1 or 2, but he was super young. So this was the first time they had seen anything like that. It's also kind of the first time I've ever been involved in anything like that. I'd never had a stylist. I'd never had a wardrobe person. Someone came to my hotel and did makeup on me that morning. That never happened before. It was very interesting for them to see. I don't think they knew quite what to expect. I think they both thought it was pretty cool. But they're also like, why is everyone making a big deal out of Dad?
It's funny because
he farts a lot.
It's funny, though, because so I just had like a few minutes with Owen.
The younger one. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, like I feel like perhaps that's what you are receiving on your end. But like what Owen said to me and the person I was with was just like this, like, I'm so proud of him. And I mean, literally, like, I left being like, I'm the biggest fan of Owen, actually. He's my favorite
Most
one in
people
that
are.
Room.
Like, Most I just, people like, are. He's. Yeah.
I didn't get to talk to your eldest.
Jonathan,
I'm sure. Jonathan.
He was in the midst of having to do a school project. He's a senior at UT as a history major. And he kind of forgot that trip was coming up and had maybe procrastinated a little bit on a paper he was supposed to have done. So he spent a lot of that trip doing a paper.
They seemed very, very proud of you. Which
you're going to make
me
cry.
It was just very sweet to see that angle. Really, really
sweet.
Yeah,
they're funny. They're two very different kids. And I'm so very proud of both of them. You know, they've had some hardship in their life. And I just, you know, I think sometimes it's weird because they both do theater and they both, you know, occasionally it will come up who their dad is. And they've had to kind of shoulder that from both fellow students and teachers. Which is a little weird. I think sometimes when a teacher comes up and is like, wait, your dad was on Buffy?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's my favorite TV show ever. And they're like, you're my algebra teacher, dude. What are you talking about?
No, not here for this power dynamic shift at all, actually.
How about you get me an A? I'll get you an autograph.
You mentioned never having had like a makeup or wardrobe person sort of show up before a con and situations like that. But of course, on the flip side, we imagine that in the television series, you spent more time in the makeup chair than most anyone. So wondering,
there are a few people who did spend more time. So I was lucky in that when they finally figured out how to do the appliance, they got it down to about 2.5 hours, which
isn't that bad.
Yeah, because it's so it was in four pieces, four pieces. It was a cowl that came from like here back. Then they would put the ears on and then they would do the whole face, which came down to about here.
Okay.
And the face part was the toughest part because it had to be glued to every bit of my face so that it would move. And it was foam latex, so it was really light. And then they would have to spend time airbrushing it, painting it, putting all the little touches. But they got that down to about 2.5 hours. You know, people like George Hertzberg, who played Adam, 5 hours every time.
Good Lord.
Luckily for me, the hands were and the arms were gloves, so I could take them on and off.
And I guess all those extra folds made it possible for it not to have to be like adhered to your body.
So basically, what would happen is they would put the whole thing up to because I had to do like arm casts and I did a full head cast, but what they did was they put it up here and were like, just clamp. If you notice, Clem always walks around kind of like this. And does a lot of stuff like this. And it's because I was clamping that here so that they didn't have to attach it.
Yeah.
So that after each take, I could take them off because they were made out of silicone and they were very heavy.
Oh, wow.
And the nails, because silicone doesn't adhere to anything, the nails would constantly pop off. So they were constantly having to reapply the nails. But I could take those off. Now, an interesting tidbit, the first time we did it, they didn't exactly know how it was going to go on. And the way that, because silicone dry is very sticky, can't get your, so right. The first time we did it, it was with a prodigious amount of KY jelly.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
and the sound of my arm going in and then out of it was
something
for Pornhub.
Yeah
that sounds like none of our business.
Luckily later on they figured out that baby powder worked just as well.
Oh my god, nice.
Yeah. So yes,
I hope you got a chance to talk to Trixie Mattel at some. Did you get to talk to Trixie Mattel at all at the AfterCon?
No,
she's just an infamous drag queen, and you talking about your nails popping off. I was like, man, Clem and Trixie talking about their, you know, like what a we would all pay to see that. I'll tell you what.
Oh, I bet. Yes, Clem would have a blast. Yeah. No, so I was going to say, like, people like George, you know, they were in for 5 hours. It was from his torso up, and his arm wouldn't come off, so he had to have people help him pee. Sorry, George. I divulged that.
Oh, George.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah.
We really have not given fair credit to the work done to give us Adam.
Yeah. George, we appreciate your sacrifice.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
And how.
Yep.
Jenny, I saw your wind up face down there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was wondering if you have the inside scoop and feel like you can share it, is somebody on the Slayer's creative team, or is it perhaps you yourself, that is a like retired snack aficionado? Right, you've got like a very specific chocolate chip cookie.
Right.
Chipperoos.
And
I think, a very specific grape soda.
I'm going to go with Christopher Golden on that
one. He's the guy. We missed our opportunity.
We missed it. Yeah. We should have asked
I'm pretty sure it's Chris.
Yeah.
Would you consider sharing with us your personal snack preferences? No pressure.
Okay. All right. I've got a few. I love chips, potato chips. I also love the British chip, a French fry. I love salt and vinegar. And my wife makes fun of me because as a child, I was always served a sandwich, like whether it was on Wonder Bread or whatever, a sandwich with potato chips, some type of chip. So I cannot eat a sandwich without some type of chip.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
And she's like, well, what is wrong with you? And sometimes I will take the chip and put it on the sandwich.
That's appropriate.
Good
Absolutely. Man. Good man. So, this is why Clem is a fan favorite. You
exactly.
know what I mean? Coming from the right place.
Yep. So I love potato chips. I'm much more of a salty like snack person. So potato chips, French fries, snack wise, that's kind of what I go for. Mm-hmm. Although I have started to develop a sweet tooth, Chips Ahoy cookies with milk and pie. Mm. Pie. I love
nice.
Pie.
Nice.
Ooh, pie.
Apple and pumpkin.
Two very yeah. different pies, honestly. Really. Yeah.
And I also have been known to demolish a pint of Ben and Jerry's Ugh. In one sitting.
Talk about 1996. That's when we all started learning how to do that, you know. I had a, maybe not a technical question, but I guess a performance question, because mm-hmm. clearly, especially given the conversation we just had about how much time you spent in the makeup chair, there was a lot of visual elements to Clem mm-hmm. In the original series. And I think we're wondering what you did differently, how you maybe approached the character differently or the performance differently since you did not get to lean on any of those visual cues.
You know, it's funny. I think I didn't approach it really any differently. You know, one of the great things about being in makeup was that I could be as big as I wanted to be. And, mm-hmm. As an actor, that is one of the things that I often encountered as critiques that I often got was, great, can you bring it down? I'm a big person. I have an expressive face. I have big eyes. I tend to be very over the top. And a lot of times that just didn't work for some of the things I was reading for, or people just didn't get it. And I was always told, like, bring it down. I was like, that was me being down. this is what you got. But being behind that makeup and the fact that it was so responsive, I was just able to do whatever I wanted. And I kind of approached that the same way in the audio recordings. Knowing I wasn't on camera, I could be as physical as I wanted to be, and oftentimes was, as I'm sure you've seen from the backstage, the behind the scenes footage, everyone's kind of like going crazy. Yeah. And that I think is what helps bring forth the vocal aspect, is if physically you're embodying everything. So it mm-hmm. wasn't a conscious decision. I wish I could say I was a brilliant actor who made a conscious choice. But no, I just kind of just went for it and was like, I can be as over the top as I want to be. And that's
hey,
it.
Maybe the best choice to make is to just go for it.
That's kind of the way I've always thought. And, you know, I come from a stage background. That's where I grew up, and kind of still is my favorite thing to do. As much as I love film and TV, it can get really boring when you have to say the same thing over and 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 over again from many different angles. But what I love about theater is it's immediate. It's right now. And that's that to me is where the rush comes from. And coming from an improv comedy background, it's just always just been about the moment and what you can bring in the moment. So,
yeah. Well, it lands very effectively.
Clem, oh, well, thank you.
you know, we always loved Clem, but I really think that specifically in this universe, Clem is.
Yeah, MVP. No, he really. Yeah, they really. Again, I'm so very thankful, and I'm. My desk is actual wood. Hoping that maybe we get to come back and do more. Don't know when, don't know how.
Yeah,
there's nothing. I have no insight onto that, but I really hope we get to come back and do more, because it was such a pleasure. It was so much fun.
And we hope to hear
I think
more.
There are a lot of crossed fingers around the globe hoping the same thing.
I'm just going to throw this out there. You know, I don't know if there are any con promoters or people who want to do things, but maybe bring us all in for a staged reading of an episode. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
You know, kind of like what they do with Bob's Burgers and Simpsons and various other things.
Yes.
Maybe we could do that. Just throwing that out.
Did you hear that, everyone listening?
All
go.
Right.
Work your little Scooby magic. Make it happen. do you have, maybe that's a good place to ask you if you have places that you'd like. I mean, clearly we know you are performing and Chris and Amber are writing. And perhaps the twain never meet, but you have a deep attachment, of course, to Clem and Clem's journey. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there are places that you are hoping Clem goes, if we should be so lucky as to go.
Gosh, I don't know. I love putting Clem, and they kind of did this too, is putting him as a fish out of water. Putting him in situations that he has no idea how he's going to get out of. And he just, through his lovable goofballness, manages to make everything okay. Mm-hmm. I kind of love that. I would love to see Clem as maybe a reluctant detective.
Yes.
As sort of some weird noirish where he's got to solve a mystery. But he just keeps like bumbling into his ears all down. The right answers. Like everything he does is wrong, but it still works out. I love seeing him in those situations. I had always, you know, with the late, great Andy Hallett, I had always wished that those two characters had gotten to meet up.
Oh, man.
There's something so similar about, I really haven't had reason to put them side by side, but there is something so similar about those characters.
Very similar. And, you know, I got to know Andy very, very well doing the cons and stuff. And, you know, he was taken from us way, way, way too soon. But I had always wished that Clem and Lauren could have gotten together, because that would have just been a hoot. I had wanted to write a comic years and years and years ago, and I just didn't, called, you know, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way Out of Sunnydale, where Clem and Lauren end up in Las Vegas and in the midst of like a mob dispute where one of them is accused of killing someone and they've got a hangover type comedy of errors hijinks.
Yes, it's never too late.
I was going to say, you can still do this. We honestly, one of the biggest images I have, when you were talking about your arms as Clem, the biggest image that I have is holding that big gulp, I think, in the car on the way out of Sunnydale. Yeah. So that was in my brain, and then you said that, and I was like, I should see Clem with his big gulp and then going right to Vegas on the way out of Sunnydale. Hell yes. Bring it. Give it to us. We would love to have it.
All right. I'll see if I can make that happen.
Beautiful.
I also think, and you know, I know we're running on time here, but because you're talking about Andy and the overlap of these characters, and we've already talked about some of the depth that Clem has been given, but I just personally find it so powerful when characters show their caretaking nature and their ability to bring a room to life alongside the things that they carry, which is why I was so touched to see the depth in Clem, and why I'm now currently so moved in thinking about the Lauren and Clem overlap. So I don't know. I don't know if you have more to say on that and how those two things meet, but it just struck me.
Sure. I think what is great about Chris and Amber is they both inherently know that you know, it's a cliche, but it's oftentimes true, is that, you know, the comedian, the clown is oftentimes very sad inside. And I think they very much tapped on that as the reason why some of us are driven to make other people laugh. A room full of strangers laugh is because we have a lot going on inside. And we're oftentimes battling our own issues and demons and darkness, and in doing that, it helps us. Mm-hmm. And I think they've very intuitively tapped into that. Not saying that I'm a dark, depressed person, but, you know, we all carry things. And there is something that drives a performer, especially comedians, to get up in front of a room full of strangers and go, I'm going to make you laugh tonight. Whether that's stand-up, improv, doing a play, sketch comedy, any of those things. It is, for me, it has always been about, I don't care what day you just had, if I can make you smile, then that makes me smile. So
James, thank you for spending time with us.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. I don't want to leave it on like a downer note. Like,
I think it's a really powerful note. And I think that we've talked to a lot of folks in the Buffyverse specifically who play villains, right? Specifically villains. And some of the most incredible villains have talked to us from an actor's standpoint of the depth that they've given to those villains. That it's not just about playing evil, right? It's about like saying anyone who's doing this thing that might be evil has a motivation to do it.
Villains never think they're villains.
Exactly. And this is not the same. It's not apples to apples, but I think that it's a very powerful thing to remember that there's always more happening inside of people than what you see. So I actually think it's a really beautiful thing.
Thank you. I think so too. It's the reason why the Greeks had tragedy and comedy. They're two sides of the same coin. Why Shakespeare either had comedies or tragedies. It was either ending in death or a wedding. Time's the same thing. And I think it's also why, a lot of times you'll see comedic actors turn in brilliant dramatic performances. Because it's there within everybody. Anyway, I could wax on, if you want to do a master class with James Leary, sign up on blah, blah, blah.
Were there any things that you wanted to talk to us about that we didn't sort of prompt you to?
No, I don't think so. If you haven't listened to Slayers, please give it a listen. It's a lot of fun. Over 8 hours, so it's a great value.
You're doing so good.
I think you'll really enjoy it. If you're a video game person, check out Assassin's Creed Nexus VR for MetaQuest exclusively. I was a narrative designer on that. I was in charge of all the Ezio Italy stuff.
Cool. Whoa.
Yeah, that's all I can think of. If you are ever in Bryan College Station at Texas A&M and they have a show, go see the improv troupe Freudian Slip. They are still going on. I was a founding member back in 1993, and they are still going strong to this day. So if you're there at A&M, Texas A&M, my alma mater, go check them out.
Oh, that's so fun. Noted. Amazing. On my count. That's very, very fun. Well, thank you again for being here and
bringing
us Clem, who is so dear to so many of us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure and a treat, and hopefully we'll get to keep doing it.
Hell yeah.
For as long as we can.
Season two.
Yeah.
Let it be so.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the screen?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.